The government of Sudan has pledged to dispatch more police to the western region of Darfur to protect besieged and helpless black Africans there. But Sudanese leaders continue to downplay the growing refugee crisis in Darfur, where thousands have died and a million driven from their homes. A year ago, Sudan's government unleashed Arab militias to put down a black African rebellion in the region. Fighting wiped out farming communities, spurred a human tide that has overwhelmed refugee facilities that were already jammed. A ceasefire was signed in April, but has yet to take hold. This week, Secretary of State Colin Powell and UN Secretary General Kofi Annan are pressing Sudanese leaders and the international community to do more to save lives. Refugees are now spilling over Sudan's border into nearby Chad. Dr. Jennifer Leaning is a board member of Physicians for Human Rights. She is recently back from the camps in Chad. She joins us from member station WGBH Boston. Welcome to you, Doctor.
Thank you.
And Marcus Bleasdale is a photographer. He's made two trips into Darfur with rebel militia. He is at the NPR Bureau in London. Thank you for being with us.
Good morning.
Let's start with you, Mr. Bleasdale. Tell us what you saw on the two trips that you made into Darfur.
Initially, I crossed over close to a town called Jijira and a collection of villages that make up that town. I arrived a few days after a government attack, which involved both official government soldiers from Sudan and Jinjiweet, which directly translated means men on horses with guns, who have been trying to ethnically cleanse pretty much most of the African blacks from north, south, and western Darfur. I saw the village that had essentially been surrounded by Jinjiweet and government troops after the bombing, and the massacres that then occurred afterwards were covered up. I found evidence of mass graves with 250, 300 people in each of the mass graves that we saw, and each village was the same. I walked through maybe seven or eight villages that had a very, very similar situation.
And what about the refugee flow?
In February and March, I saw very, very few displaced people within Sudan. Most of the people at the time had crossed over into Chad. The most recent trip I made, I maybe passed through 30 or 40 villages, and in each of those villages I was seeing between 7 and 10,000 displaced people trying to make their way from their government-held towns in the south, and they've been moving slowly north. And they move as far as they can until their water runs out or their food runs out. And then they stop in a village and try to re-nourish themselves and also their livestock before they move on further north. But essentially these people have 400 or 500 kilometers of probably the most tough terrain in the world to travel across.
Dr. Leaning, based on what you saw on your visit to Chad, Mr. Bleasdale used the term ethnic cleansing. Is that an accurate description?
People we talk to, refugees and self-settled people along the border in local Chad villages, would suggest that what they experienced was a very systematic, directed attack by the Janjaweed and government forces, very much along the lines that Mr. Bleasdale's described, where early in the morning there would be an assault by Antonov plane or even helicopter, and then the Janjaweed on horse or camel or vehicles like Land Cruisers would storm in and then systematically go from one end of the village to the other, chasing people out of the small houses, burning down the houses and the grain stores, killing the men whom they found or who resisted, raping the women they found, taking off the animals, particularly the valuable cattle and camel, and then continue to destroy the irrigation works or the wells and tear up fruit trees. There's a very organized attempt to chase people out of their homesteads and land, either to the border into Chad or into these towns where they can get some meager refuge. Virtually every one of the people we talked to said that from one to five people in their extended family had been killed in the attacks that they had survived.
What will it take to get more aid groups into that area? First of all, to monitor the situation, let alone help.
Well, the problem with this northeastern border of Chad, and in fact with eastern Chad in general, is that it is really off the grid, and it's always been. It's not a tourist area. Mm-hmm. There's not really been much colonial interest in it. There's no trade that happens. It is barren. The people are there because they've been driven across the border when they can get across. And the access, consequently, is virtually nil. There are very few roads that work at all, and they're covered by the sandstorms. There's a minimal airstrip that is covered by the sandstorm. There's no electricity, no water. So the humanitarians, the few that have gotten up there, are struggling to build a platform from which to launch operations.
If I can interrupt a little bit, I think the situation, to answer your question about how do we convince more NGOs and more aid agencies to get involved in the region, there's a very significant problem that all of these NGOs have, especially when they're working in Sudan. Some of them currently have a foothold in government-held areas in southern and western Darfur. They're doing a fantastic job with the limited resources and the limited personnel that they have on the ground. Their problem is that they are being stopped by the government of Khartoum from getting involved in any action within rebel-held Darfur. And if they do or express an interest in getting involved in setting up operations in rebel-held Darfur, they know they will be thrown out of the government areas.
This is a critical point, that in Chad the problem is just access and infrastructure, not so much politics. In Darfur, the problem is fundamentally political.
And the initial reaction from the rebel groups is a refusal to go to peace talks. So what is the incentive for the government of Sudan to make any changes, to listen even to international pleas?
We are not looking at a civil war. We're looking at a genocide. This is a targeted attack on a civilian black African population. The wipeout that we're witnessing, unless it is interrupted, is going to be accomplished over the course of this summer. The time is very urgent for the international community to put much sharper pressure on the Sudanese government and not cave in to their blandishments.
Whether we define it as genocide or not, I think the most important thing is to recognize that people are dying there, and we're talking a matter of weeks. The Jinjiweet have chopped down the mango trees, they've burnt the crops, they've stolen the grains. Even if the rains come in Sudan, when the rains come, there are no crops that will grow because they haven't been planted. And so in 2 or 3 months' time, we're going to see hundreds of thousands of people trying to move out of Sudan, not because the Jinjiweet are chasing them anymore, but because there's nothing to eat there. And then still we're going to be seeing a situation like we saw in 1998, with not 4 people per 10,000 per day dying, but more like 104 people per 10,000 per day dying.
Photographer Marcus Bleasdale in London, and Dr. Jennifer Leaning of Physicians for Human Rights, speaking from member station WGBH in Boston. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much indeed.
18 past the hour now.